Welcome back to another episode of Save for the Blind podcast. Carson and I sit down with waterfowl historian Yancey Forrest Knowles on part four of our legacy of California waterfowl hunting. We're talking about Southern California, Hollywood, and some places that do not exist today, wild limits, historic figures. Tune in right now.
Guys, it's really great to be back with you today, and I thought it might be a good time to talk about coastal Southern California, which included the coastal areas from Santa Barbara and Ventura all the way down to San Diego, and of course, the Los Angeles Plain. And I don't know if you've heard about it or not, literally some of the finest duck hunting that ever took place in North America took place in this coastal area. And I thought you might like to learn a little bit.
Because I've never heard any of that ever.
Well, through the 1870s, Southern California was still relatively unsettled and remained essentially a bucolic Hispanic pueblo. Los Angeles had an estimated population of less than 10,000 people at this time, and the entire county only about 20,000, half of which were still native Californians. In 1876, however, the railroad tunneling through the Tehachapis reached Los Angeles from San Francisco. And within the next 25 years, Southern California made the transition from frontier to province. Los Angeles, still an area of huge landholdings and farms, but destined to be the center of population growth and commerce, made the transition from Mexican to an American city. And at this time, water, the state's most valuable resource, already played a significant role in Southern California. Paradoxically, though, at times, there was almost unbelievably too much water, and concerted efforts were made to drain or reclaim affected areas for farming and city development. Three rivers and multiple creeks ran through the Los Angeles Plains to the coast, from the mountains to the east. And when excess rainwater flooded over the riverbanks, they formed or added to already established wetlands. And uniquely, during heavy rain events in the mountains, runoffs into already saturated water table often forced water to the surface through the plains, adding additional water to the normally wet grasslands and wetlands. These areas were extensive at this time and were referred to as cienagas, the Spanish word for swamp or marshland. And when drilling for wells, enormous artesian flows came forth, allowing future duck clubs to flood up easily and at little expense. Pretty hard to believe that, isn't it?
Yeah, artesian well. Must be nice. Don't know about that. Must be nice.
J.A. Graves, in his autobiography entitled My 70 Years in California, 1857 to 1927, describes how prolific the marshlands and attendant wildfowl were in 1875. And it's quoted, directly east of Los Angeles was the Rancho Cienegas, which was over 4,000 acres, almost entirely a swamp. In some places were deep pools and thickly grown tules. Between it and the ocean, Bologna Rancho was also well-watered. It was a very marshy piece of land where a number of springs of pure water bubbled up from beneath the surface, forming almost excellent pools where mallards and canvasbacks loved to resort. There were good natural ponds of fresh water in the Rodeo de las Aguas and on the Cienegas and the Bologna. In fact, there were ponds in wintertime all over the country, from Santa Monica to San Pedro. In that section, geese were also so very thick that after a day spent in the region, one would wake up in the night with the honking sound of the Oregon gray goose ringing in his ears. And later, giving an account of the huge landholdings with their marshlands, which were, of course, part of the original Mexican land grants, and exceptional shootings, Graves wrote, west of Rancho Cienega was Rancho La Bologna, which was 14,000 acres. This rancho also contained much marshland, and together with the Cienega, offered the early residents of Los Angeles excellent duck, snipe, and goose shooting. And one morning, he quoted, "The sheriff and I shot 89 snipe there." The Rancho Sisal Redondo had 10 miles of frontage on the Pacific Ocean, and the town of Bologna was where in Orange County. And later, giving an account of huge landownings with the marshlands, part of the original Mexican land grant, also had exceptional shootings. Graves wrote, "West of Rancho Cienega was Rancho La Bologna, some 14,000 acres. This rancho also contained much marshland. Together with the Cienega, offered the early residents of Los Angeles excellent duck, snipe, goose shooting. And one morning," he quoted, "the sheriff and I shot 89 snipe there." The Rancho Sisal Redondo had 10 miles of frontage on the Pacific Ocean. And the Talona was on the Pacific Ocean, and the town of Bologna was situated in it. Dominguez Rancho, some 44,000 acres, was one of the richest oil territories in California. Each of Rancho Cerritos was the Rancho Alamitos, with extensive oil fields, including Signal Hill, which now, of course, is right next to Long Beach. East of Alamitos was considerable frontage on the Pacific Ocean, and there was Rancho La Bosa Chica, some 8,000 acres. Also valuable oil-producing property. Rancho San Joaquin, some 50,000 acres, was recently acquired by James Irvine, which is destined to be the home of multiple clubs in the bluffs above the heads of Newport Harbor, as well as UC Irvine, of course. Now, these marshlands on the plains, along with the many coastal wetlands, estuaries, and bays that ran all the way from Santa Barbara and Ventura counties in the north to southern San Diego County, would become the location of some 160 clubs between the 1870s and 1950s. And noteworthy, the inland areas of Southern California, including the San Jacinto Valley, the Salton Sea, and interior deserts, would become the home of several additional clubs over time. But this story will not be included until later discussion. Now, market hunting never really took hold in Southern California, as both large and small game was abundant and available to everyone. Sport hunting was a way of life, an integral part of life at that time. And again, J.A. Graves captured this very boldly too. He's quoted as saying, "The country was a hunter's paradise from the time Southern California was settled until the late 1890s. He said, "I remember one memorable duck shoot in 1877. Our party of eight was camped on the edge of a marsh on what is now Playa del Rey on the Sisal Redondo Rancho. That evening's shoot was wonderful, and we came back to camp with 300 ducks. Further, both Cienegas and Bologna Rancho were fine ducking grounds, as were the surrounding sloughs and portions of Cerritos Rancho and Las Bosas, and any tidelands as well, where there was an ebb and a flow from the ocean. The grounds from Los Angeles and Santa Monica and from Baldwin Hills to San Pedro were literally covered in geese. We all made remarkable kills of both ducks and geese, and many of the ducks killed by us were mallards and canvasbacks." Southern California duck clubs were developed in different locations and at different times, and we'll look at these areas and their featured clubs and the situations that gave both rise and closure to them in what I hope is a somewhat organized manner. This is important in lieu of the fact that most of us not living in or necessarily familiar with Southern California geography might benefit from an overview. In fact, to add visual clarity and understanding of these areas, I suggest laying out a map showing the entire Los Angeles and Orange counties, including coastal areas extending from Point Conception north of Santa Barbara, and to the Mexican border south of San Diego. Take a look at that map, because that will help clarify a lot of things. Now, looking at the map of coastal Southern California, there are three rivers and a few notable creeks and sloughs that ran westward from the Los Angeles Plain to where they entered the Pacific Ocean. These were natural freshwater marshes, or cienegas, In the north, Bologna Creek entered from the ocean at Playa del Rey, today's Marina del Rey, the Los Angeles River at Long Beach Harbor, the San Gabriel River at Seal Beach, and the Santa Ana River at Huntington Beach. Next to them are the managed wetlands, most of which were in Orange County, usually just inland from the estuaries, and were primarily dependent on artesian water. Most of these ran from Seal Beach to Huntington Harbor in Orange County. And also, there were coastal estuaries and marshes that ran from Point Conception north of Santa Barbara all the way to San Diego and south to the Mexican border. Now, there are basically three types of marshes. First, the natural freshwater wetlands or cienegas, and they were active in the 1880s and 1910 period. These were located primarily on the Los Angeles Plains, including the historic Cerritos and Dominguez Clubs. This area began near Hollywood and ran west to San Pedro. Most of these clubs leased their lands. Second were coastal estuaries, bays, and lagoons, primarily active in the 1900s through the 1920s. Here was the Bologna Club, Recreation, Playa del Rey and Bolsa Chica. Also, the two clubs still active in Ventura, the Point Magoo, and the Ventura County Game Preserve. Here, the larger clubs owned their lands. And third, managed wetlands, relying on artesian water, mostly in Orange County, just inland from the estuaries. And they were established with the period of 1900 through the 1920s. And they included the famous Blue Wing, the Aliso, the Canvasback, and the Westminster, among multiple others. There were more clubs in this section than anywhere else in Southern California, perhaps as many as 70. Now, clubs in the coastal Southern California plains spanned the period of the 1870s to the 1980s. First to provide organized hunting was Tell's Resort. In 1881, it was located at Playa del Rey in the Bologna Marsh, the site of today's Marina del Rey. It was not actually a club, but rather a commercial enterprise that provided waterfowl. Here, the resort rented boats and equipment to duck hunters for day shoots. The acknowledged first historical club, the Recreation, was established in 1882 and was also in that location, the Bologna Marsh. Today, there are still a few reservoirs being shot in the hills above San Diego, but the vast organized duck clubs still active in coastal Southern California are located, once again, at Point Magoo in Ventura County. Interestingly, next door to these Ventura clubs, Pacific Missile Test Center also has a marsh and has shoot days in which staff and assigned military personnel are allowed to hunt, much like at Camp Pendleton in the 1950s, which had 12 miles of the Santa Margarita River. Another and most interesting and unique club or an area was the Duckville area, and this existed from about 1905 to 1933. It was located on the southeast corner of Foss Bay, now Mission Bay, in San Diego, and it very much resembles the drawbridge area in the lower southwest corner of the San Francisco Bay. And it was, which was active in about 1876 to 1979, pretty recently. It was located on Coyote Creek in the south. Another of the most interesting and unique clubs areas was called Duckville. It existed from about 1905 to 1933, and it was located on the southeast corner of Foss Bay, now Mission Bay, in San Diego. Is very much like the drawbridge area located on Coyote Creek in the southeast corner of San Francisco Bay. Both areas contain a group of cabins on stilts serving as duck clubs, usually with full-time duck hunter residents who preferred a more isolated lifestyle. The last club to close its doors in one of the major sections was the San Joaquin Club in 1988. It had been located on the UC Irvine campus on the north end of the Irvine Ranch at the upper end of Huntington Harbor. It had been established in 1896, a mighty 108-year run. Now, I've been there, and the neat story I want to share with you about it is the reason that it finally closed was not because the university was trying to shut it down, but the students university were trying to shut it down. And they started showing up on Saturdays with bed sheets, and they'd start waving as the fellows tried to hunt. So they knew that, you know, the time had come, and they closed up shop. David Combs was the fellow that I spent with time down there. And, you know, I was fortunate to have him share a lot of interesting information with me about that area. There were actually 5 clubs up on that basin, and he was belonged to 2 of them, the San Joaquin and the 20 Club. And again, the San Joaquin was the last to close in 1988.
Were those artesian wells? When did those stop? Like,
well, I'll tell you what happened is there was about in the 20s and definitely in the 30s. There was a huge push to develop the Los Angeles Plain and the Orange County Plains. And so a great deal of effort was made by city governments to stop duck hunting down there. And I'll share a little bit more information with you a little bit later about that, but okay. It was very effective.
Gotcha.
And that's what really shut off the duck clubs using artesian water. Now, clubs were located in 6 major regions, each with a unique attribute and story. From north to south, Santa Barbara and Ventura counties, there were some 17 clubs in that area. The Bologna Marshes, there were about 20 clubs. The Cerritos Marshes, 22, I believe. Alamitos Bay, there were 9 marshes. Orange County had some 68 or 70 clubs in that area. And San Diego County had 18, for a grand total of about 160 clubs over time. Now, you know, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some of the clubs, some of the most historically renowned in each section. I mentioned a little earlier, in the San Diego marshes was Duckville, and there were seven clubs existing there. In the Santa Barbara and Ventura marshes, the Adobe Gun Club was very famous. In 1917, Max Fleischman of Margarine fame again. So in the San Diego marshes, probably the most famous area was the Duckville area that had 7 clubs. The Santa Barbara Ventura marshes had several clubs. The Bologna marshes, the Alamitos Bay, Cerritos marshes, and Orange County. Orange County actually had the most extensive coastal and wetlands from Alamitos Bay to Newport Bay. Estuaries and tidal lands along the coast and riparian wetlands upstream on high tide line. And the clubs were clustered mostly in 3 areas, Alamitos Bay, and Bolsa Bay, and inland, Newport Bay to Tustin. Orange County had 54 clubs over time. It had the most extensive coastal wetlands from Alamitos Bay to Newport Bay, and incidentally had many oil field discoveries. In 1925, Orange County passed a law prohibiting duck clubs from filling up with artesian water, stating that it was wasteful. Now, many clubs continued to fill up anyway and were fined rather steeply. There was a peak of 35 clubs in 1912. Unattached hunters would shoot on the roads between these clubs, obviously highly irritating the members. And on strong Santa Ana winds, these hunters would shoot near the sand dunes at ducks returning to the marshlands off their ocean resting areas. The last active club, the San Joaquin, as I mentioned, closed its doors in 1988. Sugar beet farming eventually competed with the clubs for water. Many clubs wound up using sugar beet plant discharges to flood their clubs in the 1960s. The LA Times wrote several articles in 1926, 1932, 1939 about the clubs wasting water needed for development. This did much to hasten the shutdown of the clubs. also including the San Joaquin, the 20 Ranch, the Sprig, and the Fairview. In 1912, all five clubs clustered at the UC Irvine, which is now, you know, the back of Huntington Bay, near where John Wayne's Airport is located. Many clubs wound up using sugar beet discharges to flood their ponds in the 1960s. The LA Times wrote several articles in 1926, 1932, and 1939 that talked about clubs wasting water for development. This did much to hasten the shutdown of the clubs. Breeder and sportsman and Western editor Edwin L. Hetterly documented much of the Duck Club histories in the 1900 to 1920 period. There was much more press about hunting in coastal Southern California than all the other areas combined, including the Butte Sinks, the Soon Marsh, and the grasslands. A few of his words over time, quote, "Originally, mallards on the sloughs and creeks and canvasbacks from the salt marshes were the most desired and abundant targets. Large numbers of pintails came after open water wetlands were developed in the clubs. There was originally little market hunting because it was so easy to get ducks. White-fronted geese were particularly numerous in the Bologna marshes, and many goose hunts, pre-club days, were held on the Centinella Ranch." And also, another good quote I want to share with you is from Tom Talbert's 60 Years in California. "This section of the country," he said, "along with the coastal between Long Beach and Newport Beach, south of Westminster, was one of the greatest natural habitats for wildlife and game birds in the world, of ducks and geese, waterfowl of every kind. I've seen birds by the thousands so thick in flight as to almost eclipse the sun. The hours-long flight of ducks patterned against a blazing sky was the most amazing, spectacular, and beautiful." Another author who hunted many of the best coastal clubs and elsewhere during the 1880s and 90s, Robert Erskine Ross, in his book Wings Over the Marshes, recounted innumerable hunts, and here are a few of his accounts. On the San Joaquin Rancho, one of the first Fish and Game Commissioners, Michael Connell, made a limit bag of 50 mallards, and every bird was a drake. And while shooting on the Cerritos Club one morning, the teal were buzzing about everywhere. In a little more than an hour, I had gathered and strapped 50 of the little fellows. And one of the best widgeon shoots I ever had was in a strong Santa Ana wind. In turning over the leaves of an old log book, I found this entry from the blustery day. "Greenhead Club, very hard Santa Ana wind. Kenneth and I, the only guns, 104 widgeon. All cock widgeon except two." It was once said that coastal Southern California may have had the best waterfowl hunting in the United States at the end of the 19th century. After completing historical research, reading many sporting journals, and viewing a plethora of photographs, I believe there is much evidence to support that statement. If only I could have been there and experienced the abundance of birds with good fowling comrades in such a pristine habitat, I would declare my life truly fulfilled.
So why did they not have the presence of the movie stars as compared to like the Kern and Tulare Basin? Was it because a lot of those clubs were shut down by then, by the time the movies were coming and being famous?
Yes, a good observation, exactly. Now, many of them did shoot as guests occasionally, you know, those clubs. But most of them, as you mentioned, were shut down. Plus, they just... you know, they liked the trip from Hollywood.
Kind of get them out of it.
Yeah, no. Get out of the L.A. basin. It was it wasn't a bad drive over the grapevine, and you know they could get back to work easily.
Yeah,
and not be bothered by you know, the L.A. population.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So the only places really left are Point Magoo.
Ventura game.
And sure. Then yeah. Some stuff on Pendleton.
There's actually a Point Magoo club at Point Magoo and the Ventura County Game Preserve. And of course, I had no clue
there's actual duck clubs still down there. Point Magoo is like an actual duck club.
So the one's a, it's a mill. It's owned by the, I don't know.
The Venture Game Preserve?
No, one? The Point Magoo one, you could apply, I think, to hunt there, or there's something to do with the base or something like that.
Oh,
the,
interesting.
Well, the base perhaps, because I know they do have hunts.
Yeah.
And they hunt pretty well, too.
Yeah.
It's a nice marsh, and it's a fair, it's a fairly big marsh.
I had no clue.
Yeah.
But I got a neat story about Point Magoo Club, if you'd like to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, one of the members there at one time was Clark Gable. And, you know, Clark loved to hunt, but his sweetheart loved to hunt as well. And most of the members stayed in the clubhouse, but there were three separate cabins on the property also, and Clark had one of those. So he would bring her in, and they'd stay there and spend the night and so on and so forth. At that time, all of the shooters would gather by the clubhouse, and they'd get in a large wagon. And initially, it was pulled out by mules. And then as time went on, it was pulled out by a tractor. And today, it's pulled out by four-wheel drive. They still use it. And the reason they do that is they want to drop people off in their specific hunting areas, their blinds. And both there and next door at the Ventura County Game Preserve, you can't just get up and walk in whenever you want. The wagon would make it trip around once every hour, and you were allowed to get out of your blind and hop on the wagon. So you didn't bother, you know, the other hunters.
Yeah.
Anyways, you know, there was, when the wagon would start loading up, it was right next to the clubhouse, and there was a faint porch light turned on. But, you know, you could see if you looked hard enough, and you could figure out who was in the wagon. And one day he noticed that Clark had his sweetheart with him. And he goes over and he says, "Clark," in a real gruff voice, "you know that women aren't allowed here." And he said, "You have to get her out of here now. And if you ever bring her back again, you're out of here." Well, a couple of weeks later, wagon's loading up. Club president looks over there. He recognizes who Clark's got with him. He walks over, rips her hat off, her hair flows down over her shoulders. He points at Clark. "Clark, you're out. Get out of here now." Now, believe it or not, I mean, can you imagine somebody throwing Clark Gable out of a duck club?
No.
True story.
Oh, my goodness.
True story.
So he was a member of what other clubs?
Well, he belonged to another one closer to Santa Barbara.
Okay.
And then, of course, you know, he shot all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, I got stories about him shooting in the desert areas and a variety of other places, but, the prime area that he hunted was, you know, in the Kern Basin, part of the Tulare Basin.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So that club is still operating today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you know, we talked about Robert Stack, and, Robert Stack, of course, his father built a club up in the Butte Basin, and then Robert shot there.
Yeah, Stack Farms.
Yeah,
I was going to say, Stack Farms rings a bell.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. It's funny that's all tied together.
Pretty neat clubhouse. You go in there and you know, you see all the memorabilia in there, things that he had brought there, and stuff from the many guests that he had with him.
Yeah. Is there any history of like those hunters in SoCal also going into Mexico and hunting down there? I mean, was that
a good question?
Is that a thing?
You know what? It's interesting. There was a period in time where people from the LA basin, again, a lot of the movie stars, went into Mexico not only to hunt but to fish.
Mm.
You know, that was a big thing, and they went to a lot of times to the new resort. You know, the ones on the new resorts, I should say, the ones on the ocean, fairly far down the country.
Hmm. Interesting.
There's still some pretty doggone good waterfowl hunting in Mexico, by the way. And I know that there's a lot of controversy about the number of ducks that are harvested down there. Gary Kramer, whom most people know, not only a renowned photographer and author, but, you know, he had a wonderful career with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Started out in San Joaquin Valley, and he was the person that was responsible for initiating the easement program,
mm-hmm.
which allowed several clubs to remain as clubs in the grasslands. And, so he did a great job with that. And then eventually he got to come up and he managed the whole federal refuge complex in the Sacramento Valley. Had a fabulous career. But the point I wanted to tell you is he did the first research on duck hunting in Mexico and the effect that it was having on the population, especially the brant down there. And what he found out was, interestingly, is that, yes, people that went down there to hunt harvested quite a few birds, but the numbers of people that went down there was relatively small.
Mm-hmm.
So in his perspective, it was not having the dramatic effect that most of us assumed.
Gotcha.
I just keep thinking about the Clark Gables thing and like, say the limit was 50 birds a day. It sounded like he hunted every day he could. Can you imagine how many ducks and geese he killed in his lifetime?
I think actually Clark hunted only on weekends.
Only on weekends?
Yeah. You know, he was working. He was
still, it's like if you're shooting 50 ducks a day every weekend.
But you remember, it was only 50 ducks for a short while. And I don't think he was hunting when it was 50 ducks. It was about 7 years. And then it started changing. You know, it went to 35 and then 25, 35. 15. And, you know, especially during the 30s, during the drought period, changed. All the regulations changed in the 30s. But, I believe that, the number of birds that he harvested wasn't as high as you.
So there's probably some other people that aren't as well named that probably harvested a lot more. I just keep thinking, you know, if you had the ability, let's go out and hunt 4 days a week, 5 days a week, and you had access somewhere, it's like, whew.
Our 25-26 fall hunt program is in full swing. So don't miss out on the deadline for all October hunts. This will include one deer hunt and a lot of opening day waterfowl hunts. We do have some new properties in the works, so go to our website and see when those have been updated. So we have a lot of real cool upcoming news, so check out all of our social media posts when that stuff becomes available. So don't forget to apply. Third Saturday of every month is the deadline. We also have some pig hunts on there as well. Those are 2 weeks prior to each pig hunt. Those are extremely successful. People are seeing pigs on every single hunt for the last 2 months. Got to go look at those. CalWaterfowl.org. We have a bunch of events coming up. August 21st, we have the Bingos and Brews there in Lodi. We have the Watsonville dinner on August 21st. We have Benicia on August 23rd. And then we have a Chico Chapter Sporting Clays shoot August 24th. So if you're interested in supporting California waterfowl, go to calwaterfowl.org.
Wonderful area in Southern California, great history, the Salton Sea. And if we have some time after that, maybe we'll talk a bit about the interior basins beyond that. But let's talk about the Salton Sea. Although irrigation projects eliminated most of the wetlands and many of the freshwater lakes in California, they occasionally created habitat for migratory birds. The most important and unusual case was the creation of the Salton Sea in 1905. Now, the sea formed in the Salton Sink, one of the lowest places in North America, located in today's Imperial Coachella Valleys, near the California-Mexican border. The sink has been refilled many times in the distant past by the Colorado River as it meandered to the Gulf of California. At the time that the American settlers came to the basin, the Salton Sink was a blistering hot playa. Beginning in 1901, the Colorado Development Company diverted water from the Colorado River into the basin, and it was renamed the Imperial Valley. It was a stunning success. Within a few years, 7,000 people had moved to the valley and were using water supplied by the company to develop farms. In 1905, however, high flows on the Colorado River broke the diversion dam and sent the entire flow into the basin, where it continued to pour for nearly 2 years. The Southern Pacific Railway was enlisted to plug the gap.
Yep.
By the time the flow was stopped, the dry basin had become an enormous lake, 50 miles long and up to 15 miles wide. The Salton Sink had become the Salton Sea. An accident created the Salton Sea. Irrigation sustained it. In the decades following the flood, the Imperial Irrigation District brought most of the land bordering the northern and southern parts of the lake into agricultural production. The warm climate and the steady supply of Colorado River water made it possible to grow crops year-round. Since the basin lacked a natural outlet, the irrigation drained water from the surrounding fields flowed into the Salton Sea, turning it into the largest sump in the western United States. Water diversions along the Colorado River eventually led to the drying up of the river's delta in Mexico. With the destruction of the delta, Pacific flyway birds lost yet another wintering area along the migratory route. Before that had occurred, birds were already using the Salton Sea. The water development blunder that had created the sea and the irrigation water that supported it came with a price. The evaporation of the lake left behind tons of salt, and over the decades, the salinity increased, making the sea unfit for any species. In the meantime, the area around the sea, due to extensive agriculture, became a haven for waterfowl. Market hunters were making a living in the rice and milo fields of the Imperial Valley by the turn of the 19th century. And by 1907, sport hunters had already begun shooting at the mouth of the New River, where it entered the Salton Sea. It wasn't long after the first club was established in 1908, known as the El Centro, on the lower Alamo River. By the 1920s, the Colorado River Delta was quite large and contained thousands of acres of cattail, reeds, and bulrush, all perfect habitat for migrating waterfowl. As the delta began to dry up, however, the birds increasingly began to stay near the Salton Sea in the agricultural fields of the Imperial and Coachella Valleys. Widgeon were the most common birds, followed by mallards, pintail, and teal. Every evening, as the sun began to set, wave after wave of pintails and mallards moved into the surrounding fields to feed. And then, as the darkness fell over the area, the widgeon came, tens of thousands, headed to the lush fields to feed on alfalfa and tender lettuce hearts. Farmers could hardly irrigate a field without the first sprouts being consumed by overwhelming masses of widgeon. The problems became so bad that the state and federal agencies issued special depredation permits. Hunters flocked into the valleys and shot widgeon all night. It was written in Forest and Stream in November of 1907 that farmers were putting up hunters wanted signs and were actually grub staking the hunters, lodging them, and even buying their ammunition. 1 year later, in November of 1909, Edward Hedley in Forest and Stream wrote, "The farmers have been shooting all summer, irrespective of game laws." Hedley further stated that one firm informed me that it had sold 1,000 guns and 1.5 million rounds of shells already this season, which shed some light on the growing wildness of the game. Initially, the preponderance of clubs was established in both the Coachella and Imperial Valleys and on the Gulf of California during the 20s to the 50s. Most of them were in the Imperial Valley, but several as well were established to the north in Coachella Valley. By the 1950s, pintail and mallards began to move away, but the widgeon continued to come in large numbers and devastated the lettuce fields. The problem became so serious that a new federal program was permitted in 1970 to allow duck clubs to feed grain on their clubs during the season to keep the widgeon out of the lettuce fields. Unbelievably, the widgeon preferred the lettuce and continues to feed almost exclusively in the fields. Ironically, the sprig returned in large numbers to feed on the piles of wheat that were now available to them on virtually all Salton Sea Area Duck Clubs. It was this feeding program was actually allowed in all of Southern California duck clubs, not just the Salton Sea clubs. Almost overnight, the sprig returned to the area in huge numbers and became the bird of choice at the clubs. Clubs were so happy with the feeding program that they adhered closely to the rules. Two rules were essential. First, a program required a certain number of pounds of wheat had to be placed in a specific spot on each club weekly. And second, no blind could be placed within 200 yards of the feeding location. Now, the sprig learned to come in high over the feeding spot and circle down in small spirals to land in the piles of wheat, unmolested. Things were different, however, when they rose up to leave. Most of the time, filled with wheat and complacent, they lifted off and flew out at low levels, often winding up on a hunter's duck strap. There's no question that the sprig hunting was fantastic, especially in the days of seven sprig limits, and hunters were happy. Happy, that is, until the program ended in 1989 due to complaints issued by anti-hunting groups that the feeding program was in fact a baiting program and birds were being slaughtered. With the end of the program, sprig hunting died off rapidly and clubs began to fold, as club habitats had been created primarily for sprig, open water ponds. Since that time, starting in the mid-1990s, CWA has been working with several clubs, especially in the area northwest of the Salton Sea and close to Nyland, developing mallard habitats, which nicely is providing improved hunting in these areas once again. Today, most public hunters focus their efforts on the Imperial Valley State Wildlife Area, the Wister Unit, located at the southeast area of the sea near Nyland, or the Sunny Bono Salton Sea National Wildlife Refuge, which is contiguous to the Wister Unit. There were well over 100 clubs in the Salton Sea areas over time. A few of the historically clubs are worth knowing about. The one that I'm most familiar with and means the most to me is the Mecca Club, which was started in 1926. It's still active today, located 4 miles southeast of Mecca. It originally operated as a commercial duck club at $5 a day. Now it's owned by the Smith family, and it was rebuilt by CWA, and it includes a 25-acre close zone. I shot there as a guest about 10 years ago, and nicely limited with 6 mallard and a sprig. Not bad. You know, for a dying area. There are many, many others, but, we've got a lot to talk about today. I'll be happy to answer any questions about the Salt Sea before we move on.
Yeah, I mean, there was a point where there was a fishery there too, right? Where people were going out and I don't know what they were catching, like a
tilapia.
Small... Okay.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. You go to the market today or you go to a restaurant and they're serving tilapia. Tilapia is a misnomer. It could be any number of fish that, you know, white-meated fish and so on and so forth. But, they were addressed as tilapia.
Gotcha. And then the salinity rose and then killed the fishery and everything.
Yeah, and the lake level dropped and it just killed them in mass levels. And they would wash up to the banks. And two things happened. Farmers would come by and pick them all up and take them back and feed them to their hogs. But the stink was unimaginable. You know, it was very disruptive to the tourist trade, and things started changing. Matter of fact, you know, in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, again, a lot of the Hollywood set spent time over there. And it's interesting that, you know, one of the refuge areas is named the Sunny Bono Refuge, right? But they spent a lot of time over there, hunted at a lot of the clubs. Our good friend Clark Gable was a regular, and it was wonderful hunting. The other thing that's happened is legally water is drawn off now to go to San Diego County. And one of the other things that you know, brought the federal government in was the dust that was created rose up in the air and was going into San Diego County, you know, as the lake level dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And big changes. Then there's been a huge effort to rebuild it, to turn it into two lakes, big dam in the middle, turn it into two lakes so it could be managed more readily. And in fact, Audubon over the last few years has spent a considerable time and money trying to effect some changes down there. It's a struggle. It's really difficult, you know.
Essentially, the water from the Colorado River isn't necessarily reaching the lake. Is that the biggest issue?
Oh, it got it got shut off.
Yeah,
You know, 1907.
But what's feeding it now? Is it just
irrigation runoff?
Gotcha.
Irrigation.
Why didn't they end up calling it Salton Lake? Where did the sea come from? It's a salinity?
That's a good question.
Sea. It's like, why didn't they name Tulare Lake Tulare Sea? It probably was bigger.
Yeah, I would say two things. It was probably quite large and it was very saline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very salty. I would imagine.
That'd be my only guess, is the salinity was different than any of the other giant lakes that were around there at the time.
Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, no, interesting.
I'm glad you asked that. I'm gonna check that out.
I don't know. I just, you know, we're talking about lake this and lake that, and like that, and now it gets named the sea. It's like,
let's look on Wikipedia.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I know. Like, there's still good amount of birds that hang out on the lake. I mean, like, I've seen videos of huge rafts of ducks.
Well, let me tell you, when CWA started rebuilding some of the clubs down there, we're invited down there because the Sprigate left. And by the way, most of the birds in that area had come from the Big Basin, you know. It had come out of the basin, Utah and other states in that area. That's where the birds come to, interior southern area down there.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily in the regular migration pattern there. They're all coming out of the basin.
It's just funny to me. You got to think about the generational path of the pintail in California. And it's like, all of a sudden, a bunch of these pintails show up and there's a bunch of food. And it's like, hey, we're going to be here. And it's like years and years of them of being in this spot, free food. That goes away. And it's like, hey, we got Tulare Lake. Let's all go stay there. And then that goes away. And like how they've just shifted.
And all the rice comes.
All the rice comes and the rice goes and the rice dries up. Like the history of the pintail and their flights throughout the last 120 years would be so interesting to see based off of what was there at certain times, such as a feeding, and what isn't there now, because it's got to be just such an interesting path throughout California and what they do now comparatively to 120 years ago.
Well, yeah, and you know, in that time period, 120 years ago, it's estimated there was 20 to 40 million birds in the migration through California. I mean, could you visualize that?
No.
You know, the term, you know, you often hear about the sky was dark
with birds. Yeah.
It was dark with birds. And the flights went on for hours.
Yeah, yeah. You have a good day ducking. You're like, yeah, we saw like a couple hundred ducks. Like we killed our seven, but we saw a thousand ducks flying.
Yeah. Like, be impressive. We'd love to go back in time and see that. But at least we have some accounts.
I do want to mention that about 15 years ago, you know, CWA started doing some work down there at behest of some of the club owners, especially the ones in the northwestern section below the town of Mecca and down closer to Nyland, you know, closer to the refuges. They've done some significant work where not being able to attract or shoot sprig like they did in the past, they realized that you know, it would make a lot of sense to turn it into mallard habitat. CWA has done a great job down there. Those clubs that rebuilt are shooting birds.
Yeah, so, got to adapt to the changing conditions.
Absolutely.
Well, it seemed like a lot of the club, you know, when you could shoot more than one pintail, you know, that's what a lot of clubs went for. The grasslands is another example of that.
Well, it was the king of birds.
Yeah, and then they had to change in the last 30 years in terms of their habitat management.
You know? And the number of reports that you read from times past of people shooting, you know, like the first limit in 1901, you know, 50 birds. A lot of those clubs shot 50 sprig.
Yeah.
You know, right. each hunter.
Can imagine that.
It's unimaginable.
Yeah, think about how many other ducks they passed when they were doing that. Teal, gadwall, widgeon, mallards. Like, unless they were just seeing pintail.
I just think of the guns they were shooting, and you had to have misfires and things like that. And you know,
you know, there's a and look at and the early ones, the real early ones, you know, black powder.
Yeah.
And you read about the numbers of birds that they took. Can you imagine how many there had to be?
Right. Exactly. You know,
but a lot of those guns too, they were shooting 4, 6, and 8 gauge.
That's true.
You know, 10s and 12s were used to shoot cripples.
Yeah.
But
those would knock you down.
Big, yeah. Big changes, huh?
Yeah.
Big changes.
All right. What's next?
Okay. Let's, you know, let's talk about interior San Diego County for a minute. Very interesting area down there. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but there's a classic photo of Babe Ruth standing up in a boat on one of the reservoirs behind the city of San Diego. And he's there with his guide, and he's been duck hunting. And he's swinging his gun.
I've seen the picture.
Like a bat.
Yeah,
yeah. It's called the Sultan of Swing.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen the picture.
It's a great photograph, you know. But anyways, impressively, there were quite a few locations located in the interior of San Diego County that provided some marvelous shooting for both private clubs and public hunters, mostly municipal water supply reservoirs, but also a few man-made lakes. And surprisingly, there are still a few reservoirs controlled by San Diego City that public hunters can still hunt on and get a few ducks. The better lakes for hunting were Cuyamoca, Barrett, Henshaw, Hodges, and Morena. And the best reservoirs for hunting were Lower Ote and Sweetwater. Over time, there were some 18 lakes and reservoirs shot. Mostly private, but some open to the public. Two are worth mentioning, Lower Ote Club and Lower Ote Reservoir. They were in the time period from 1898 to 1928, and then open to the public, 1929 to 2003, actually. Club member E.S. Babcock was the proprietor of the Hotel del Coronado. He harvested ducks in truly impressive numbers. On this reservoir in 1898, one gun in 2 days shot 400 ducks. Six guns took 776 ducks in December of 1899. Opening morning of 1889, two men shot 700 ducks in an hour and a quarter. And an unknown number of hunters took 1,800 ducks in one day.
Now, are they going and selling some of these at the time, or is it all personal consumptive use?
No, it was not personal consumptive, but it was a normal thing to drive around in your wagon and drop off ducks at all your friends' houses.
Okay.
You know.
I can imagine just back then, just keeping everything fresh.
Now, There's a rumor that a lot of those were mud hens.
Okay.
But that's debated also, you know. So in 1929, all the reservoirs and lakes in the fall of 1929 in this area shot almost 77,000 ducks.
Wow.
Hard to imagine, huh?
Yeah. Hard especially to in today's state.
Truly impressive. Uniquely, many of the hunts there were conducted on duck boat drives. Do you know about duck boat drives? And I'll talk to that when we get into the desert area. Also, there's a great club called Little Lake where it still takes place.
Oh, wow.
Excuse me. But anyways, duck boat drives are when you get your hunters that surround half the lake at the far end, and then a number of fellows get in a number of boats. They start rowing towards ducks sitting on the water, shooting when they can, but they drive them into the hunters waiting at the end of the lake. Several of the ducks shot or leave. Several of them turn around and come back over boats and you know, the guys in the boats. So both groups get to shoot ducks that way.
Wow.
Boat duck drives.
Safety third.
Yeah. Uniquely, many of the hunts there were conducted on boat duck drives. One of them was Sweetwater Reservoir that was in, being used from 1898 to 2003. When it was completed in 1898, the reservoir's dam was the highest in the United States at the time, and duck boat drives were the norm here in the early days. And also, Cuyamaca Lake, which was started in 1888, and nicely still being shot today. When it was constructed, the dam was the second one built in California. It was privately initially, but open to public hunting since 1960. And Lake Henshaw, being shot from 1922 through 1926. Now, his brother, Henshaw's brother, was Frederick W. Henshaw, who was the founder of the White Mallard Club in the Butte Sink. Duck hunting has taken place there for the last 86 seasons. There are still three city municipal water reservoirs where duck hunting is still allowed. I just thought you might be interested to know about that San Diego area.
Yeah, because Lake Barrett, you could rent a boat from the lake or the city and then go out and hunt the duck blinds.
Right.
Like today.
Yeah. And, you know, interestingly, the interior area behind the L.A. Basin and San Diego Basin had quite a bit of hunting also. So we'll talk a little bit about them. But, you know, you're talking about the Kearns, the Kearns, San Bernardino, and Riverside counties, and also Antelope Valley of the Kern and Los Angeles counties. So located here were both artificial and natural lakes and reservoirs and basins. Virtually any spot from 1906 to the 1950s that could hold water became a spot to shoot ducks, private clubs, and commercial operations. Many of these locations were in Antelope Valley and in Kern and Los Angeles counties north of Lancaster. 36 of these locations located were closed and taken into today's Edwards Air Force Base. Two spots are still shot there by base staff and their guests. There are many, many historical clubs. One of the most famous ones is the Wagas Land Company. It was started in 1930. It was north of Lancaster. It was the last active club in Los Angeles County. When active, guests include, here's favorite, you know, John Wayne and Bing Crosby. There are still two clubs, as I mentioned, on Edwards Air Force Base that are being shot. Guests there include General Jimmy Doolittle and TV star Andy Griffith. Several commercial clubs, La Brenda, Roseman Lake, had guests also. And our favorite, Clark Gable, shot there.
Dude was everywhere.
Yeah. Literally. In the lakes, basins of interior Los Angeles, Kearns, San Bernardino, and Riverside counties, also included with hunting clubs and commercial hunting locations in Antelope Valley, were the artificial and natural lakes, reservoirs, and basins of the Southern California interior. Lake Baldwin and Big Bear Lake, and by the way, Big Bear originally was a wet meadow before being dammed in 1884. So these two lakes in the San Bernardino Mountains had some of the finest canvasback hunting in California. In fact, 1920s through the 30s, 5,000 ducks were shot on one of these two lakes in the 1919 opening day by 300 hunters.
Wow.
Mostly commercial operations there. Also included in the lakes in this area was Crane Lake that was shot often by Edwin Heddeley that we've talked about several times, the Elizabeth and the Castec Lake as well. San Jacinto Valley had 5 active clubs in the San Jacinto State Wildlife Area. Prado Basin, Paris Reservoir, had 3 active clubs. The San Jacinto Valley has 5 active clubs and the San Jacinto State Wildlife Refuge. And also near it, the Prado Basin, where Paris Reservoir is, has 3 active clubs in Riverside County. So clubs in this county continue to provide important hunting in this region. I can't say enough about the San Jacinto Valley. It continues to attract and provide, you know, good numbers of ducks and attract some very fine hunting. I think Mystic Lake Club is probably the finest of the 5. Had the pleasure of hunting there a few times. And, of course, the refuge there provides good hunting, too. And as a matter of fact, CWA is mm-hmm. in the process of expanding it at this time. All of those clubs and others in the Riverside area were developed by Dr. Harold Hill. And I think one other episode I had talked about my enjoyable time that I had spent visiting with Dr. Hill at his house and how he surprised me one day and reached into his gun safe and pulled out one of the famous Widgeon Gun Club Parker 20 gauges, which was a great surprise and really enjoyable to fondle a bit.
So did he hunt that club in Hanford and then come down to that basin to develop some clubs? What was the time frame there?
No, he hunted only in the
basically. Oh, but he had one of those guns.
He had one of the guns from.
Got it. Gotcha. Yeah.
There were 10 total.
Yeah.
The collector of the finer things.
Yeah, yeah. But anyways, I mentioned, you know, Crane Lake a moment ago, and we're headily shot, almost straight canvasback. Just amazing how good the hunting was there. So I'm going to talk about Mono Basin a bit and the Owens Valley. One of the most distinctive places in California was Mono Lake. It had wonderful waterfowl habitat, and several streams entering the lake had fabulous wetlands on them as well. And there were clubs shooting there quite a bit, especially during the 1920s to 1940s period. The large freshwater inflows from creeks and springs into the delta of the lake, marshes, lagoons provided needed freshwater for the waterfowl and the near shore areas. Historically, Mono Lake was a major stopover location in the Pacific Flyway. Prior to 1940, at least 1 million ducks regularly stopped at Mono Lake during the peak migration. Now, Catherine Clover, a resident along Rush Creek before 1940, stated that the sky would go black with the huge flocks of ducks. They fed in the mouth of Rush Creek and would rinse off their feathers in the fresh water of the creeks. Now, before Los Angeles took the water, residents remember that there were so many ducks along the Mono Lake shoreline that when they all moved together, it was like the shore itself was moving. Now, near the end of the 1970s, a force arose that could actually challenge the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power at Mono Lake. The defining moment was May 12, 1979, when the lawyers of Friends of the Earth, the National Audubon Society, and a new group called the Mono Lake Committee entered Mono County Courthouse at Bridgeport, an area that I've hunted quite a bit myself, the Bridgeport Meadows. Good, you know, pretty good shooting in the time period that I shot there. Anyways, they entered the courthouse to sue the department. Now, what came out of that was the public trust ruling that lands and resources belong to the people, and the governments serve as its guardian. And with this ruling, water and a degree of health has returned to the Mono Lake and the basin. There's a few interesting historical clubs there. The one that I think is pretty neat was actually started in 2009. It's called the Dirty Sox Duck Club, and it was named after miners, you know, that would come into that area and they would wash their dirty socks.
No.
But anyways, it's still active. It's the first club to rehabilitate the Owens Lake wetlands. Owens Lake was phenomenal as well. It's south of Mona Lake. And it had gone dry. You know, the water had been sucked dry of it. But it's reconstituted now. And if my memory is right, it's one of the favorite areas of John Carlson, past president of CWA. He'd go up there on an annual trip with his friends from his days with the Department of Fish and Game, and they'd break their float tubes out and catch fish and relive good times. Anyways, a really neat place. You know, they would conduct duck drives on some of these lakes, and probably the most famous one is right off of 395. It's the Highway 395. It's the Little Lake Duck Club. And it's about 1,000 acres, and it's got high basalt cliffs all the way around it. And in, let me see, I want to be exact about this. I think the Duck Club went in there and bought their land, which is about 700 to 1,000 acres, in the late 40s. And they have phenomenal redhead and canvasback shooting in there. And interestingly, they still conduct duck boat drives there.
Oh, wow.
And they do it, you know, and the guys, part of the club and guests stand up along the high basalt rim at the far end of the club, and others get in the boats and drive the ducks to them. And some turn around and come back over the boats again. And so they shoot very well in there. But all interesting history in those interior desert areas.
Yeah, I know, like, you know, Mystic Lake and San Jacinto, you know, their bird averages are extremely high, you know, and people wouldn't think of that area as being, you know, a waterfowl place. But, you know, talking to a lot of the members, like, you know, I don't go to the Butte Sink because I shoot enough ducks here. There's no reason for me to leave. And even San Jacinto, it's at times one of the highest bird averages in the state. I know it can be hard to get on at times just because you know, there's more people than spots available. Yeah. But yeah, we've done a ton of work in those areas that have really, you know, bolstered the uptick in hunting success for sure.
Well, I used to shoot with a dear friend, Mike Everhart, there. And he's since moved, but I don't think we ever hunted there without limiting. We take the occasional sprig, occasional widgeon, but it was primarily teal, which was one of the reasons I went down there. I love doing that. Great opportunity to shoot a nice 28 gauge, you know, small gauge gun.
Yeah.
Neat things about Mystic Lake Club, 10 members each have a separate cabin, and they're modular homes, really, that were built in the style of a log cabin.
Mm-hmm.
So they've really done a nice job of landscaping the area and decorating these and so on and so forth. But they also built a pretty good-sized pond that's full of what's called the wipers,
yeah,
which are crossed between stripers and white bass.
Yep.
And these fish don't spawn. They get up to about 7 pounds and just stay that size. And you can hardly cast a fly out there without catching one of them.
That's awesome.
Boy, yeah, let me tell you, they pull. That's the striper blood in them.
Yeah, we had multiple camps there, and so all the kids would catch them. It was fun.
Sounds like we need to stick some of those up at Grizzly somehow. We need to dig a pond.
I know, right?
But yeah, well, interestingly, the area all around there, especially just to the west, is being developed.
Mm.
You know, home developments are going in, a golf course is going in, and the clubs have to really be firm about protecting their area. You know, they all work well together, and that's what's keeping that basin alive for duck hunting, their joint efforts.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Place I need to go visit.
Yeah, you do. It is unique. It's an oasis in a wasteland almost, you know. It's just its own little piece of heaven. It's really cool.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Save It for the Blind podcast. You can find our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.